And I want to hear from you. So, hands up, comments coming in. I'll start with some. So raise your hand if you have a question. You can also type them in. I prefer the raised hand, of course, because we can go back and forth. So Angela's asking, why do so many guys start off wanting to grow, and then when it gets hard, they shut down? My ex-husband was all in, and we agreed on growth, and then he stopped, and the same with my last boyfriend. Yeah, it's just fear. You know, all of us have our own threshold for what we're up for. And we get triggered in such a way that starts to mimic an old pattern, and we stop wherever we stopped in our childhood, and we don't go past that unless we want to. And so most people will shut down around their wound because they don't want to get into it. It's too hard. It's too intense. It's too uncomfortable. There might be too many emotions I have to face and deal with. So, you know, this is not just a guy thing. This is a human thing that we will just shut down where we get frightened and where we perceive more disadvantages than advantages to doing the work. And that's just lopsided perception again, but that's where this guy's at. All right, Kayla, at what point do non-negotiables need to be relaxed? Good question. I had wanted to meet a man without kids who wanted kids because I didn't want the complexity of more than two people in a relationship, and I wanted to have kids with someone for whom it was new too. I relaxed that, quote, deal breaker and ended up with all the complexity I feared, of course, and a guy who ultimately changed his mind on the kids because he had done it before. Now I'm well over 40, and the likelihood of meeting a guy without kids who wants a woman over 40 and wants kids is low. But it still is rationally a deal breaker preference. Yeah, you get to have that. Again, when we compromise our integrity about what we want and who we are, what's in our heart, we cause pain to ourselves. It just hurts. And we create scenarios to get us back to get us to come back into alignment with our heart and who we really are. So I'm a big fan of stay true to what you want, and I don't think it's too rigid or, whatever you're judging it as. I think it's just right for you to want what you want. At a certain point, your age, of course, is going to dictate something different, but then you deal with that then. You're like, okay, I'm relaxing out. I thought I was going to have this kind of, you know, some of us are like, I thought I was going to live in Hawaii before I was 40, and here I am at 42, and I don't live in Hawaii. So I guess I'm done with that one, that sort of fantasy or that dream. And then I move on. But I don't also then shame myself or beat myself up for that. I come to peace with myself, and I do whatever process I need to do to get right with myself there. Ashley.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I gotcha.
Okay, so my question is around the couple operating system and how the POSs are linked to create that.
Okay.
And I guess I heard your example with your wife about kind of your number one being business and then her having friends and kind of speaking, communicating so that your needs are being met through kind of speaking to what you know is important to them.
Yeah.
I guess, could you just allow, I don't know if I have a clear question on that, but maybe like another example or just like a little bit more about that.
Sure. Yeah. Can you give me an example of a situation you might be in so I can kind of make the example relevant to your situation?
Yeah, I guess what's coming up for me when I'm thinking about like having a need and then speaking with my partner, and then like it almost feels like if I'm aware of what his POS is, I just wonder, it feels almost like I'm trying to, like it's almost like manipulative or something.
Yeah.
Like if I'm...
Yep.
I don't. Yeah.
Yeah. What's his highest priority in life right now?
Right now, career.
Okay.
For sure.
All right. So if you want something, you're going to have to communicate in a way that he sees it as advantageous to his career, right? That's essentially what I'm saying, right?
Right.
Right. So how do we do that in a way that doesn't feel manipulative?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it might feel like this is something you just kind of have to experiment with, but people sometimes can get a little afraid here because of what you're saying is like, well, wait, isn't that like manipulating someone to just get what we want? And if you want to see it that way, that's okay. Another way to see it is, no, I want to actually have his back on his career because I care about him. And I want to feel like he has my back on what I care about. And this is how I get what I want.
Yeah.
Is I help him see how, like, look, man, if you do this, it's going to help your business and it's going to help me. Are you in?
Right.
You know? So you could say it's like selling him on something, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like if you have judgments against selling, you're going to have to work with that. You know, in yourself. But I think sometimes we actually need to persuade someone in a way that has them go, "Oh, I didn't see that before." Mm-hmm. Right? So in this way, persuasion, we move from manipulation to persuasion to help both people win. That's like negotiation, you know? Mm-hmm. Does that help?
Yeah, it does. And then in the end, hopefully, both people are getting their needs met rather than the view of, you have to compromise for me so I get my needs met. Next time, I'll compromise for you so you get your needs met. Like that view.
Yeah, yeah. That's win-lose. And I like what Stephen Covey says, win-win or no deal. And that's what my wife and I go for, is win-win or no deal. And that's one of the agreements of the 10 agreements of an indestructible marriage, is like we say, we're going for win-win or we're not going to, no, we're not doing that thing unless we both win.
Yeah. What was that guy's name you just said?
Stephen Covey, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
okay.
Leadership book. You've probably heard of it.
Yeah. Helpful. Thank you.
Okay, Ashley. Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. Good one. Hang on. Deb. 1 sec, Deb. Okay, Deb. Deb, you there? Okay. Deb, I'll come back to you because I can't hear you. Andy.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay. Question, how do you tell if the value of the relationship is, like if somebody just doesn't value the relationship or it's just a low priority?
That's a good point. It's definitely a low priority, we'll say. What's that?
I said, because it could feel like it's not being valued if it's just a low priority.
Yeah.
To one person.
Yeah. I would say it can be either, but let's say it's a low priority and my actions are probably, if it's a lower priority on my POS, I'm going to demonstrate that through my actions. So it's going to leave the feeling, and someone in my circle is going to feel less valued, like it's less valuable. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's about the same thing. Like, can you help me see how it might not be?
I'm trying to think of an example. I'll just use an example. With my husband and I, we live in separate houses right now.
Okay.
Now, when you were just talking about how could I, like, he puts work as a very big priority for him.
Yeah.
His obviously is a huge priority to him. And when I give him a lot of space, he always comes back, which has put us into this like constant circle, which is annoying.
Okay.
So if for me, living together is a priority for me because having that daily connection is important to me. I could see how he could get a lot more done. He has 2 kids that live with him full time, and I have kids, and I can see how living together and sharing responsibilities could give him more time for work. Whenever he has to take a business trip, he comes to me to take care of his kids. But that just feels like being used. So the relationship's low in his priority, but and space is higher. So do you see where there it feels like it's not valued at all?
Yeah. Yeah, to me it's I'm just kind of hearing it's the same thing. If I really truly value something, it's going to show in my daily actions and it's going to show up on my POS a higher.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it should show up somewhere. Basically, we're looking for it to show up somewhere, not just not show up at all.
For what to show up somewhere?
Like that valuing a certain something that we value, even though it may be lower. Like, for instance, if we came up with a way to link things to say, okay, well, this is higher on your priority list and lower on mine, but I can link this to it, there should be some win-win there. But if it's not valued at all, there wouldn't necessarily be a win-win?
No, that's a good point. No, there would be a win-win if you can find it. And you can see how, you know, like if he's honest with himself, and if I was working with you two and I just gave him full permission to be totally honest, don't worry about hurting her feelings, what's just true for you? Where is the relationship on your POS? Like when we look around and we actually did the exercise, and let's say you show up as like fifth, right, or sixth, and that would just be true, right? You'd be like, yeah, that's about where it is, and that would feel congruent with your experience of him. And he'd say, that really works for me to keep it where it is.
Okay.
Right. And he could, you guys could totally make it work, and you could go, okay, I'm willing to be with someone where it's really quite low. Like my wife is, you know, she's what, fourth? And that totally is okay with her because she feels in herself like a priority. She has the feeling of feeling valued and loved and cared for by me. And when she doesn't, she lets me know.
Okay.
She's just really clear, and it's abundantly obvious to both of us.
And when she lets you know, you react.
No, I don't react. I say, yeah, okay, got it. Thanks for the feedback. And then I say, that's probably true because our experience matches up. And I go, yeah, I can see how you would feel like less of a priority right now. And I would validate her feelings and I would say, got it, thanks. And then I'd say, well, and then I'd have to choose, well, do I want to have her feel more valued or not? And if I'm up for it, which I am 99% of the time, is like, because it's what I want also. I want to feel more connected and I want to feel like the synergy between us. I don't want to feel distance and separation and tension. I don't like that. So it's usually motivating. One of us has to call it out, right? And sometimes it's her and sometimes it's me calling it out saying, hey, I don't feel that. Sometimes I'm the one raising my hand saying, hey, I don't feel valued over here. And it turns out in that week, like I'm number seven because she's got a million things going on and I'm like last on the plate, you know, last on the menu. And we talk about it and then we kind of get a shared reality, but consistently over time, it hovers for us around a certain area that feels really good to both of us. And it's all out in the open. There's no, I'm not pretending to be like, no, you're top priority for me, honey. No. Like that's me as an insecure man, not wanting to upset her feelings, right? I'm going to be totally true to myself and I'm going to be like dead honest where it's at. And then she's going to agree with me and go, yeah, that's about where it is. So it also takes a mature man to be able to admit that, yeah, this is about where it is and it's where I want it to be and it's okay with me. It's not like I don't need this to change. And again, we kind of look at people's behaviors where his daily actions are telling everything. And people tend to, as I often say, people tend to set their lives up for how much intimacy they can tolerate. That he's probably at his threshold, which is why he wants to stay separate. It's too much probably to live with you for his nervous system and who he is and where he's at. That's probably feels like too much for him.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it sounds like you want more, so I would be interested in a man who could bring more and is like, yeah, I want that too. I actually care about joining blended families here and joining them and I want to go all the way. And then his actions match it, you know?
Okay. But, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks, Andy. Good stuff, guys. Heather, what do you got?
Hi. I'm wondering if there it can be a negative in some ways if you have similar core values in your personal operating system.
Yeah,
Like
give me an example.
with my husband, like when we first met, I think he was in a lot more of the same category as the other women are saying, where work was more his priority and he had no tolerance for any sort of intimacy or working through these issues. And over the years, I've seen that's changed, and I actually see that. Well, I started to think of it when I read a comment from another woman that had taken your course previously, where she was mentioning how grateful she was that her husband or her partner wasn't interested in personal growth as much as she was, because it makes it kind of difficult if you're both sort of ripping open your childhood wounds and dealing with this stuff at the same time. And that's kind of where I'm finding my husband and I. I mean, I guess it's just where we are, but in some way, I almost get the sense that what you're saying is that there can be a positive relationship between having difference in your personal operating system, as long as maybe similar things are there, but they're in different orders.
I'll say yes to the first thing you said, which is absolutely, it can totally work out for people to be totally opposite and very different and live totally different lifestyles and value different things. That can completely work. Absolutely. So, yes. And for someone like you, who let's say you're ripping open your childhood wounds and you're digging and all that, that can also work big time. And I would say that's going to work more of the time in terms of long-term success, especially if the longing in both hearts is to grow and deepen over time and to be just to go all the way, to go, as far as you can together, you're gonna be a little better off than the couple who one of them wants to grow and one of them doesn't, in my judgment.
Yeah, I guess it's just getting through. I guess like we have a 3.5-year-old daughter, and I'm 5 months pregnant, and it's a very tumultuous time for us to both be going through this. But I guess just be grateful, like you say, I guess this is just building that foundation for a more long-term relationship.
Yeah, Heather, if you guys can get through this successfully, you're going to be a very strong couple. Right?
And we already are in many ways
Yeah. I
because we
mean,
have the
look, my wife and I, we were both in grad school at the same time. She was a couple years ahead of me, studying to be therapists, analyzing the shit out of each other all the time, and going in circles for hours in our fighting for 3 years. That lasted 3 years. So I, but look, we got through it and we're like, our foundation is so freaking solid now because we worked through a lot of those core issues, and if and when they arise now, we have an arsenal of tools to deal with them, and we have a tremendous amount of internal resources to deal with them, and they dissolve really quickly.
And it's, I guess it's just sort of grist for the mill of our young children to have to experience us going through this when our children are so young. Because I mean, it's amazing for growth, but it's incredibly tumultuous, right?
Yeah, it's tumultuous, and just keep relaxing into it because there's no problem there. It's just tumultuous. Just relax. It's fine. You're going to get through it. Have confidence in yourself. Stay in your heart as much as you can. Work the tools, own your part, and keep coming back.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it, Heather. Yeah. My values have changed so much. So, like, my operating system used to be when I first met my wife, I was really into extreme sports, climbing, skiing, and mountain biking, right? So, I would try to put that on her. And I only wanted to date someone who was into those kind of things also. I wanted basically a tomboy woman who I could hang out with and charge it as hard as I was charging it. But I actually didn't really want that, it turned out. I thought I wanted that. Instead, I attracted this woman who was a little afraid and, kind of dainty sometimes and cute and like kind of awkward and couldn't quite, whatever, do the extreme thing. And thank God. I want to go charge it with my guy friends. I don't want to try to get my wife to charge it as hard as me. Like, no thanks. So now it's totally different. I actually, by the way, I'm not into those things. I'm barely a little bit of mountain biking, tiny rock climbing here and there. But anyway, the point is, I changed a lot. I thought that was me, tried to put it on her. That backfired big time, thank God, because she knew herself well enough to not like buy into that to get my love. She pushed back, and because of it, we grew and had a great relationship. All right, Stephanie. You there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I got you now.
Hello. Okay, perfect. I've got a question to what you just said. So it seems like the non-negotiable pillars, as I understood them, first were like really firm, non-negotiable values that a person has, but now you said they can be sort of temporary or the personal operating system evolves. Did I understand that right?
That's right. It evolves over
time.
Or
is there a difference?
Yeah, it evolves over time. So the non-negotiables to me are also going to evolve over time. Maybe monogamy will evolve over time into polyamory someday for me. I don't know. I don't think so, but I'm open to whatever if that's where I evolve into. So yes, they're potentially going to evolve over time, as with our operating system. That just changes over time. What was important to me 5 years ago is no longer important to me. Some things have stayed consistent, like personal growth and spiritual growth and things like that have stayed consistently a very high priority to me. Other things of like rock climbing and things that I would die for 10 years ago, I could care less about now.
Okay, so how do I kind of, because I'm thinking of the homework, find out for myself what are the kind of values that are I probably have over time, and then maybe some that are more or less currently in the situation I am in, and how do I find out without talking to him what his personal operating system is and what his non-negotiable pillars are?
Well, here's the instructions. Is you don't have to figure anything out in this moment. You're just going to do the homework, follow the exercise. It's going to be very straightforward. You'll do that. And then you're not going to be able to help it but to kind of go into his sphere and wonder about his POS. And it's demonstrated by his actions, so it's not going to be very hard. At some point when this course is over, you can engage him and say, hey, will you do this exercise with me? And he can take it or leave it. And then you can really find out. But that's the instruction now, is do your own. If you want to eyeball his, you can, because you're not going to be able to help it. Stay with your own. I was already going through the thoughts
while you were talking.
Yeah, of course.
Kind of.
That's okay. No problem. And stay with your own and get really clear on your own. And it's again, it's demonstrated by your life. So it's not going to be that hard to, quote, figure out, because there's nothing to figure out. It's already happening all day, every day.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Teresa. And then, Sheila, I'm coming back to your comment here in a minute. Teresa, you got to unmute yourself. You there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you great.
Awesome. What's your general thought on when you're dealing with someone with an addiction, whether alcohol or drugs? How does that factor into all of this? I mean, is that something... If you're dealing with someone who's an addict, should you first let that person deal with that addiction before you even start to begin to try to do this, the relationship work?
Well, yeah, it's challenging because with a quote addict, if we're going to use that label, that person, is it your guy at this point?
Yes, husband, yeah, alcoholic. Husband, okay.
So husband is more into, let's say, alcohol than he is into the primary relationship with you, as is demonstrated by if given the choice to choose you or choose the alcohol, especially if he's under stress of any kind, he's going to choose the alcohol most likely.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's what you're just up against that. You know, it's not good or bad. Remember, it's not right or wrong. It's just what is. It's like, okay, how do I want to relate to this, given that you're not going to be able to, quote, help him get sober? You're just going to be yourself and continue to value yourself more and more. And, you know, maybe one day you'll leave. But if we looked at his POS, alcohol would be near the top. But remember, alcohol is a symptom of something else. So something he also really cares about is avoiding something. avoiding pain, mm-hmm. avoiding feeling his feelings, avoiding, you know, whatever, because there's something missing there for him. So, but alcohol is like an old friend. It's filling it for him. It's filling that void, perceived void.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But you, yeah.
And just go ahead.
That's all. You go ahead.
And then kind of switching topics here, but yeah. looking at your fictitious guy POS.
Yep.
That has relationship with you at the bottom. You're saying that that's not necessarily a bad thing, correct? When a fictitious guy or typical guy has relationship as the bottom layer of his POS.
Correct. As long as it can be sixth or seventh, as long as you feel valued and cared about and you're getting mm-hmm. your needs met in your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And very, you know, very few guys can have it that low down and have their woman still feel really loved and cared for in a really awesome way. She's probably not going to feel like a queen, but she's going to maybe feel, you know, like attended to a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to have great relationships and I like to promote amazing relationships. So I don't encourage settling down for people who kind of can do it. Because I think you're worth more than that. You're so amazing as you are. He's not seeing it. Neither are you, or you wouldn't be with him. And the moment you do, that shifts. And then you bring in a more inspiring person and people to be truly honoring you like a queen.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Teresa. Thanks for bringing the vulnerable truth of your lives, everyone. Okay, Sheila, if monogamy is a non-negotiable and your husband has an affair, clearly it's not non-negotiable for him, can you move on from that? Should you? This is my situation. My guy shut down after baby number two. He travels a lot for work and wasn't here for me. I was asking for more, and he was gone more, and then he found a new cheerleader and had a secret relationship. This is really common, by the way. We are separated now and not working on our relationship. I'm wondering if you can speak a bit about affairs and going forward, how can I trust myself to pick a better partner? Current guy obviously isn't working on it, and we have different values. Monogamy is a non-negotiable for me. I thought I could forgive and move past it because I love him, but through this class and this process, I'm not sure what to do. I see it more as compromising my true self to stay in the relationship where I'm not respected. I'm glad you're seeing that because you're not respected. And respect starts with yourself though. So my guess with you being overwhelmed and, you know, in it as a mother of two young ones, some way in which you weren't respecting yourself. And perhaps if we dug deeper, we might find that there's a way in which for a long time you don't respect some part of yourself. And you believe that. And so you'll, again, remember, draw in things to confirm that and poke at you until you face that, until you respect yourself there. So I'm glad that's a kind of percolating in you and waking up in you, self-respect. And affairs, my quick take on affairs is it always takes two. And people in their victim seat don't like to hear that. But if you want to get empowered in an affair situation, you look at what your part of the affair was. You know, a new mom is usually very attentive to her new babies, and guy usually feels neglected. And so it's really challenging for a new mother to like also attend to a guy who's kind of feeling needy and like, traveling a lot or whatever. That's challenging. And there's even more there that it's like, what am I contributing? How did I contribute to this affair occurring? And usually affairs start well before kids. The tension, the resentments, there's things that are unaddressed. You're not standing up for yourself. You're not setting clear boundaries. You're not speaking your truth. Not to mention whatever history you have of people violating your boundaries and your family of origin and their family. So when I look, I would ask you, and I would probably find what I found 100% of the time, which is, where was the affair in your family when you were growing up? Who had an affair in his family? And I find every single time there is an affair somewhere in the parents of the people that having an affair. Aunts, uncles, grandparents, affairs somewhere. So someone's got a deal. And that person in this case is you, because he's not looking at it. I'm sure he feels, shame and guilt maybe about it. But he's not, I'm guessing, doing anything about it. You are. So I challenge you to really look at, use the affair as a catapult to a much deeper transformation for yourself that gets at this respect piece, that gets at this lineage component of the affairs, that gets at how you haven't maybe had boundaries or stood up for yourself. So this is how we get to that, is you start seeing all the benefits to the affair happening. How's this affair helping you? Right? Because we're not talking about forgiveness here. Forgiveness implies there's something that was wrong. The affair needed to happen, apparently. You need to face yourself in a deeper way at this stage of your life. It's time to face yourself. Stop running and face it. Heal this. Clear it out. See all the benefits of the affair. See the drawbacks if the affair never happened and he was Mr. Perfect. And you're going to start to see over time that this is like one of the greatest things that's ever going to happen to you, because it got you empowered more and more. It got you to start closing some loops, tightening up your boundaries, etc. So this, you can like not have this happen again to you in your life. Okay? So that's what I got in this sort of laser coaching for you, Sheila. Okay, Janet, after 20 years with my husband, some good and a lot not so good, I don't remember who I am. I have given in so many times, I've lost my authenticity. How do I rediscover that? Well, are you getting any glimpses of it through this course? Is there any moments of like, oh, there I am. Oh, here, you know, aha. Because right now you're being authentic, so it's, you haven't lost your authenticity. Okay, so watch that story. Anyone telling us, right? Listen to this. I don't remember who I am. I've given in so many times. That person's authentic. They're telling the truth. They're owning, taking responsibility for giving in. And Janet, I hear that you're tired of that. So thank you for taking responsibility and being authentic right now. So you do this. You tell the truth like that with everyone you're close to. And if they can't handle it, leave them. They're not your friends. A true friend is someone who wants your authenticity and demands it and is like celebrating it. Otherwise, you stay stuck in a childhood pattern of, remember, trading your authenticity for love. Draw a line in the sand right now and say, I'm done with that. I'm no longer going to do that. And it doesn't go away immediately, but it becomes a pole that you can draw from, that you've planted in the ground. That you're like, yeah, I'm from here on out, my practice in my life is to be myself, be authentic. And you start in the Facebook group. I'm guessing we've heard from you in the Facebook group of being, you know, sharing your truth. Please bring it. It's liberating. It's refreshing in a society where people are like putting on pasty fake smiles, right? So many people are full of it. But then there's you. So be you. Bring that. All right. Sandra is saying, I've identified some non-negotiables that I've denied myself until now. I've let him know in a very non-threatening way, and I've not heard from him since. Not surprising. Have I done this too soon? Should I have held off till the end of the course? They won't change, and I was being true to me, but you did say to wait 30 days. That's true, I did. And it's okay. You did what you did. No problem. I definitely said wait 30 days. And for whatever reason, you felt like you needed to say it, and you said it. It's all right. And you got the information. You haven't heard from him since. And here's a little explanation why you haven't heard from him. Because you trained him to get used to you not having non-negotiable needs, and you got him used to that. And now you're, you know, letting him know, oh, that's not who I am. Here's who I am. And that's a little confronting and shocking and surprising. He's not used to that. Right? He's used to the old person who abandons herself. So I'd say it's a good thing. Remember, when you stand in who you are, you're going to lose friends. You're going to lose men. You're going to lose people in your life. but would you rather lose people in your life and stay with your integrity, or compromise your integrity and have lots of friends? The answer is really simple for me. Okay. Nikki, what do you got? You're muted, so unmute yourself, and then there we go.
Jason, can you just fill out a little bit more? Is it like a meditation process or a writing process, how we can kind of work out exactly what our POSs and non-negotiables are within ourselves, especially for someone that's had a long history of not being fully aware of their needs?
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically in the homework assignment, which you'll get later today. So you'll go into the members area, you'll just download that Word doc or PDF, whatever you prefer, and start filling it out. So it's essentially like 10 questions or so, and you're going to look around in your life. What mind chatter do you have? What do you think about most of the time, most of the day? What do you spend your money on? When I ask and interview people in your life, what do they say is most important to you? It's things like that that we can start to get at how you live your life versus what you think you'd like it to be or what you think it is. It's demonstrated by your actions. So I would just say just do the homework, and then if you have any questions, then you can ask me from there.
Okay, and if you're not currently in a relationship, what about the COS? Would you just
don't worry about examples
from the past, or okay?
Don't worry about it. And you're going to not be able to help kind of reviewing someone from the past, or maybe even like put in a fictitious guy you would like to be with and be like, yeah, or a guy you're kind of interested in and put him on there. But again, the focus, remember, during this 30 days is really for yourself and getting clear on who you are.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks, Nikki. Kim.
Hi, Jason.
Hey.
Thanks so much. Can you hear me? Okay. I've been going through homework one, you know, each week because we're supposed to add to it. And I'm just having a really hard time. I've identified one of my core strategies, you know, my issue was abandonment or whatever, and strategies was, you know, owning this victim story, and this course has really enlightened that for me. So thank you. But yeah. I'm trying to find benefits to that core strategy, and you know, come up with four. And I'm just like, how is that bad core strategy that I want to abolish like helping me?
Okay, what's the core strategy?
Being a victim, I guess, or playing this victim story up in my head, like. That I've been abandoned and I'm a victim of that abandonment. I guess.
Okay, that's,
you know,
not. All right.
That's not the core strategy.
Hold on. Not necessarily the core strategy. A victim is that the core issue for you? Is that you felt abandoned?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
All right. So let's go with that it's some version of I felt abandoned, right? And
yes.
why is that? What were your parents up to?
Well, it's primarily not like a daddy issue. It's like a mom issue.
Because
I had like super business mom with, you know, four apartments in the U.S., never home.
Okay.
Lapping the globe.
Yep.
And so I think, you know, as a result, I was the nice girl performer, outward perfectionism, but also rebellion. So like lying and manipulation to get what I wanted. So like...
I'm guessing you didn't feel loved by mom.
I mean, I think I felt loved, but I felt physically abandoned. Like she tried to, but she was never there.
Okay. She was focused on other things, right? Other things were more important to her, like providing for you or her own career, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as a little girl, you felt abandoned, not attended to physically, not touched, not like held and not kind of honored in that way, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that develops into you, one of your strategies is, you said, achieving and performing. Yeah?
Right.
Okay. So core strategy is more like that. isn't like victim. It's
okay.
Its core strategy is you got really good at some things to try to get mom to notice you. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you write down the things, the core strategy is all, and these are the benefits to feeling abandoned is mom, and by mom is I got really good in school. I got noticed in sports. I got achieved this award and that got me into this school and this happened. And then I met that guy or this person. So you start thinking of all the primary, secondary, and tertiary benefits of mom having four apartments all over, traveling all the time and being gone and not attending to me.
Right. So then what is the victim thing? Where does that play in, I guess? Because like somehow I started writing and that was what I came up with. What would you consider that in the
Well, I need to know
analysis?
What. Why do you feel like a victim? A victim of what? Like, well, I'm guessing you're talking about current relationships?
It's carried over into other relationships with my boss, with my current relationship. Like, I feel victimized and abandoned, I guess, by, you know, those major players in my life. And I'm just wondering, like, how I can...
Yeah.
I guess I just need to drop it. Then, like, just coming to that epiphany is really... been good from this course or something.
Okay, yeah. You've had the intellectual epiphany, which is great, but you're still in judge. You stand in judgment of the victim in you, the little girl who is like, feels really desperate sometimes and alone and helpless and like, hey, what about me? And I got hurt here and it's wrong. And, you know, she feels that way sometimes, right?
Right.
Yeah. So you don't want to make her wrong for feeling that way. There's nothing wrong with identifying with the victim sometimes because that's just how we feel. Your job is to be an amazing mother to her and not perpetuate what was done to you, which is by being gone all the time and making her wrong for her needy feelings.
And I think part of this like nice girl performer is, you know, like big shoes to fill, you know, like my mom was so successful.
Yeah.
And then there's like, sorry, excuse me.
Take your time.
This part of me that's just like, well, I need to perform. I need to have a huge career as well. But then I don't want it to jeopardize like an eventual relationship with a child that I would have. So it's they kind of go against each other. Does that make sense?
It does. And I sense you're subordinating to mom and comparing yourself to mom. And I need to be like mom. That's again, that's a recipe for failure there. You want to be true to your own POS, not hers. And live the life you want to live that's inspiring to you.
Right. And I see that I've picked this guy that is kind of filling her, like he's very much like her.
Uh-huh.
And it's super, and like the idea of me, I don't think I would ever like, you know, I have no judgment towards it, but just be like a housewife. I'd always want to have a career, but the idea that I would want to like, you know, make that a big focus of my life. I don't know if that really aligns with him, you know, like if he would accept that, you know? So anyways, I think this non-negotiable stuff will be really interesting.
Yeah. And I would encourage you to go back to the first 2 weeks homework and really work the method on how you're going to stack benefits to mom being gone all the time, i.e. my current guy being like mom and being gone and traveling a lot and not really attending to me. How is this helping me? How has it always helped me? How is it continuing to help me? And the moment you, again, you start getting more and more traction there, you're going to be like, oh, I don't need to play this out. I don't need to be with someone who doesn't really attend to me and physically be there with me, right? I can choose otherwise. Right. I don't have to be chosen and just kind of take what I can get here and work hard to try to get love, prove myself or whatever. You don't need to do that. But you got to do the work to get yourself there internally.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, you got it, Kim. All right, good stuff here. Sheila, yes, my mom had an affair. See, there we go. Boom. 100% of the time. I've yet to be proven wrong in this one. I love this. Thank you so much. You're amazing. This is wonderful. You're right, and it's helping me back to my true self. You got it. Kate puts his POS on me all the time. If I'm not with him, I'm against him. How do I communicate that what I do is not wrong, it's just different. Great. Eventually you can share this in 2 weeks, share it with them and just say, hey, here's what I'm learning about why I feel so angry and hurt when you ask me to do X, Y, and Z, and use specific examples and say, I'm learning now that you're what I experience. And you could say, tell me if I'm wrong here, but what I experience is you're putting your way of living life on me and expecting me to live like that. And it really hurts, and it kind of sucks over here. And, you know, you could just throw that out there. If you don't want to involve him, then you need to start standing up for yourself more and differently in a way that goes through and communicates it and gets the message. And I like to, my favorite sort of weapon is to do what I want done to me. So I would validate and honor the way he lives his life and just celebrate it. And see him, like truly see him. And then when he's relaxed and his guard is down a little bit because he's feeling really seen by you, then you can, you know, say, hey, and here's my experience over here. I feel kind of hurt and alone and put upon, and like, so it has me retreat in myself and shut down and pull away and contract, and I feel really judged and criticized and not seen for my, for how I want to live life. Julie, seems like we can also exchange authenticity for security. Yeah, security equals connection. Connection equals security. So to me, it's the same thing, but I'll go with that too. That especially as children, we're exchanging who we are for a roof over our head. Right, we don't want to fall out of favor with the big people, or they could really rip the carpet right out from under us and our basic needs might be threatened. So in that way, yes, security. To me, that's all still connection. All right. If you've already asked a question, you can put your hand down so I know who I'm talking to here. Okay, Jan and then Jasmine. Jan, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you got something?
Yeah, going back to affairs, my guy was really, really weird situation. He was having kind of an emotional thing happening with another woman who he's known for 30 years but just got in contact with 10 years ago. When I met him, they were texting back and forth and kind of like sexting back and forth with naked pictures of her, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, I didn't know anything about this for the first 11 months of the relationship. And wow. Then I found out about it. And I just wonder how or what my role in that was for those 11 months, except the only thing that I can think of is that I didn't set down my boundaries at the beginning and we didn't have that conversation. At least he didn't have the conversation. I did when I told him that I was, you know, committed to him and I wouldn't be seeing anyone else, but he didn't say a word. So is that my part of it?
There's more. I don't know yet. But there's definitely more to the story, and it's probably comes in the form of your childhood and some injury that hasn't been healed in you. So were your boundaries violated as a child?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. My dad and my brother both abusing me.
Okay. And have you healed that?
Obviously not.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Probably not, or you wouldn't keep attracting boundary violations into your life to get you to get stronger and more empowered around your boundaries and your self-respect, right? Because as a girl, you didn't have a choice with dad and brother, maybe, and now you do.
But recognizing that, which I do recognize that, but recognizing it and healing it are completely different things, and I'm just not too sure about how to go about healing something like that, so I don't attract that.
Yeah, well, I'll give you the short version here, and you know, it's It's sessions versus just like 10 minutes of me talking to you, obviously. But it's the where I would be directing you if I was working with you is to do the work from week one and two, where you're stacking up benefits to having to whatever abuse you experienced by dad and brother, how that helped you as a girl, and what kind of strategies came out of that, and what did you get really good at, and what did you start to master as a child, and what did you start to look out for, and how did it wake up certain faculties in you that became assets to you? You know, hypervigilance, looking around, picking certain kind of friends, avoiding these kind of situations, blah, 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 like on and on. Like, how did this actually help you? So that's the second part. The first part is feeling in your body the experience of like going back to the moment. This is how trauma is essentially healed, is we got to go back to the moment and feel it in our body, because we couldn't back then because we fight, flight, or left, right? Or froze. Mm-hmm. And we need to actually feel the sensation to release it in our body and stack the benefits and then drawbacks to how this never happened. Because your life and who you are has dramatically been shaped by experiences like that. And there's both the low side to that and there's the high side to that. How did it hurt? Which you already know. No one needs to tell you that. And how did it help? How did it serve you in a really beautiful way, even though it also hurt you?
Okay, because that is the section of those two pieces of homework that I am definitely been struggling with.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I'm glad you're mentioning this, and I'll just say this to everybody. When we struggle with that kind of homework, it's largely because we want to go back to sleep. We want to stay unconscious. And any time we're around tough material that we've had in our life, we typically go into a number of avoidance patterns and strategies that we have. We go to the chocolate, we go to the alcohol, we go exercise, we do everything but finish the exercise. For myself, and this is true for everybody that I've seen experience this kind of work, is we avoid, because some part of us would rather believe that we were deeply hurt and only hurt and it didn't serve us. We just want to stay stuck in that story, and we want to stay stuck in the hurt kind of victim place. But that's not who we are. We're so much bigger and stronger than that. So we need to see the other side, and we have to come back over and over to the homework and finish it and keep digging in deeper inside ourselves. And then if we get totally stuck after tons of trying on our own, we go hire someone that knows this kind of approach, and we just get it done.
All right.
Does that help?
It does. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it, Jan. Because that courage, Jan, lives deep inside of you. It's there to face this in a whole, you know, new level at a deeper layer. It's totally in you. Okay, Jasmine, your hand is down, so I'm not going to call on you. But if you put it back up, if you still got a question, I'd love to call on you. Kelly, and then we're going to start wrapping up here. Kelly, you're muted, looks like.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so you really just messed my head up with what you just now said about I had my question all together, and now my head is like spinning, because that's probably it. But, you know, okay, so my question last week, and I don't know if you've seen this, my boyfriend is pretty entrenched in addictive behaviors. So I won't call him an addict anymore, because I can hear that you don't like that, but he pretty much is. I mean, he calls himself that. He totally owns it, and he's struggled with it for his entire life, since he was 12 years old. So, and he has, you know, this whole thing has made me so clear that, you know, I had him all wrong in this, and all not there, doing nothing, and now I'm able to like see how hard he really is trying, and all these little things that he's doing that are super hard for someone where he's at.
Yeah.
So that's great. But when I do this exercise, what's happened is I did it with two things, and I found the two big core complaints with him that I have. One of them is my mother, and the other one is my father. And he, when I look at him, I can see he is like this image of my mother and my father together.
Yeah.
And it's this perfect sync. I swear to God, it's insanely unreal. Of course. And it explains why I cannot let go of this man. And I mean, I swear to God, and we can be fighting, and I'm like, I want to kill him. I just think I can't do this anymore. He's crazy. I'm crazy. He's making me crazy. I want to kill him. And I can walk outside, and I did this twice this week. I did this nesting thing, walked away from him instead of trying to kill him. And he comes back to me, and then he's like reaching out in apology and trying to make amends and owning his behavior. And then in that second, I can't even imagine leaving. It's like, I know there's no way I'm ever leaving this man. I mean, that's
yep,
how
that's the parent child. That's the parent child relationship. You know, kids will.
Yeah,
I
mean, and
I watch it with my own kids, and any kid, especially a kid who's getting really abused or hurt, moments later they'll be in the lap of the abuser.
Yeah, it's very weird. But my parents were not abusive. I mean, this stuff that, I mean, my mother was critical and judgmental, and
all right,
you
hold
know,
on,
my
Kelly,
dad was gone.
Kelly, I'm just going to try to zero you in on here. What, do you got a question for me?
Yeah, well, my question, I guess, is, and is it okay, because I hear you saying over and over again to these people, well, hopefully you'll get out. Hopefully you'll leave. Hopefully you'll move on. And I'm like, is it going to be okay? Yeah, well, I mean, you've said that to me and a couple other people. You know, you deserve more. You'll find somebody better. And I just wonder, is it going to be okay if I get to the point with where I just am in acceptance? Because, I mean, that's kind of what we practice in Al-Anon. It's like, okay, you have your choice. You can be with this person and be at peace and accept it. If the issue is the addiction, you know, because I tend to get kind of crazy around, you know, the addiction stuff and trying to get him to stop. And I realize I'm not going to. That's not going to happen. But, you know, is it, you know what I'm saying? It's like, am I going to be a fail on this course if I end up not leaving?
No. Again, the instruction here is not do what Jason says or thinks. It's follow my own truth in heart, in my integrity, like being completely, if I'm in my deserving queen, powerful self, where I really deeply value myself, am I being treated the way I want to be treated in this relationship? And most people, like a lot of the women in this course, the answer is no. So I'm like, well, then what are you doing, right? I don't say I hope you leave, but I am saying, be true to yourself. Do you want to be in your integrity and have someone meet you there, or do you want to compromise your integrity and go over there for connection? I'm saying that's what you've always done. So it's really up to you, and it's not a fail if you stay with this guy. And I would challenge you and say, if you can really answer the question, am I feeling really loved at a deep level, respected at a deep level, and cared for in a way that I deserve, believe I deserve? If the answer is yes, then by all means, he's just right for you.
Okay. I just figure I put a percent of time on that because I don't think anybody feels that way like 100%
okay,
of the time.
Fair enough. Let's do 80-20. How does that sound?
Okay, I can live with that. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
All right. Thanks, Kelly. 80-20. I'm glad Kelly brought that up. So let's just from now on go 80-20, because that's Kelly's being realistic and challenging me to be realistic, which is really good because my bar can sometimes sound high. 80% of the time, 20% of the time, the person just is kind of flailing, right? Or struggling, or they're in their own stuff. That's true for most human beings. And no one can live up to 100% showing up all the time. That's just ridiculous. So thanks for that reality check, Kelly. Good one. Andy, no question. Just want to thank you for all the time you put in the Q&A and Facebook. I get as much from this as the main lecture. Awesome. Yeah, I think that's why the Q&A is so key, right? There's so many other gems that come out, and the dialogues are really important. Okay. That looks like about everybody. Great. Thanks, everyone. Recording will be up with the homework definitely within 24 hours, but my guess is if my team can stay on it, we'll have it up by tonight and the email will go out by tonight. That's my goal, but definitely by tomorrow at noon, you'll have all of that material and be listening to the recording. Okay. Have an awesome afternoon, evening, wherever you are.